a pretty color, but I'm not looking for color. I'm looking for legs. Is that so selfish?
Okay. Ready to talk the shit out of some legs.
Hello, and welcome to Grapes and Grain Podcast. I'm Teenie.
And I'm Laura. And this podcast is about our favorite things in the world.
Alcoholic beverages. So today's episode, we're gonna get a little sexy.
Ooh, we are. It is a sexy episode. You wanna share the title?
Absolutely. So today's episode title or subject is legs and lace.
Legs and lace. What is this podcast about? I thought our booze soak expletive-filled podcast was family friendly.
PG-13 maybe.
Yeah.
No, well, this all sounds very showgirl and burlesque, and legs and lace are actually referred to patterns that beer and wine leave behind in a glass.
Yeah, it's true. Legs refers to the vertical drops dripping down the inside of a glass after you take a sip or a swirl.
Mm-hmm. And lace refers to the bubble structures created from the foam or head of the beer as it's being drunk.
Oh, so sultry. Yeah, and legs actually get a lot of like attention and usage. Mm. And street cred for being a sign of a great wine. Like, oh, the legs on that wine.
Ooh, girl. But, ooh, child.
But from what I read, that's actually a bunch of, like, myth and urban legend.
Oh, shit.
I know. Spill the tea on it. And really, it's just a term that sometimes, like, gross guys use in, like, wine tastings, compare legs to their, their waitress's legs. Like, oh. Who has better legs?
It's so cringy in 2019.
Icky, right? Yeah. So what about beer? Does it have the same connotation? Do you, if you see like good head residue, are you like, damn, that's a fine brew?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, certainly sometimes there are innuendos that happen. But before we answer too many questions and get too deep, Laura, what you drinking?
What you drinking?
Okay, well, so I tried to find a pretty leggy wine for today, and we'll learn a little bit later that a leggy wine kind of equates to a high alcohol wine. So one of the higher alcohol varieties of wine is a Shiraz, so today I've brought for you Pinney's Hill Footprint 2012 Shiraz from McLaren Vale in South Australia.
Ooh!
So I chose this wine because it does have a higher alcohol content at just right around 15%, and like Australian Shirazes or California Zinfandels usually show exemplary legs because of this. Footprint is Pinney Hill's ultimate luxury offering, quote from the website.
Ooh.
And it's a wine lineup. The wine is dark and deep in color. You actually mentioned on the like red to purple, like deepness color before we even started.
Mm-hmm.
It's gorgeous.
It is.
It's extremely aromatic. When I opened it, I could smell blackberries from across the little kitchenette. And it also smells like chocolates and spice. It's really rich with the full body and tastes juicy, dark fruits, chocolates. And there's a noticeable tannins and acids, which give it a beautiful structure. So yeah. It's great. McLaren Vale. It's about an hour south of Adelaide in South Australia. One of the first few areas cultivated for wine in Australia. And the climate is similar to the Mediterranean because it's surrounded by coastline on the west and the foothills of Mount Lofty Range on the east.
Well, that all just sounds delightful.
Yeah, sounds lovely, isn't it?
It does.
Mm. Well, Teeny, tell me, what you drinking?
What you drinking?
Well, today for my lacy beer, this was sort of a fridge grab bag. I went to Total Wine the other day to shop for one of our other episodes, and I ended up just picking up a six pack of other things I thought were interesting.
Cool.
It ended up being a $21 six pack.
Yeah, you know, F it. Exploratory beverages.
Yeah, this was
tax write-off.
A single $6 beer, but it ended up working out. This is a Tiki Milkshake IPA. I'm going to pour it. I haven't poured it yet.
Milkshake IPA.
Oh. Yes.
Sorry, I talked over that. That was beautiful sounding before. Tiki Milkshake. What makes it milkshakey?
Yes.
Is that creamy, cloudy? What's the deal? Tell me.
So before I tell you about the beer, let me tell you about the brewery. This is a brewery called United Art, and it's a collaboration with another brewery called Windmill Brewing.
Okay.
United Art is in Madison, Wisconsin, and I actually couldn't find too much about this brewery for some reason. I know that they opened up in 2016, and they specialize in... their first beer was like a juicy IPA. So the milkshake IPA is actually an iteration on the hazy IPA.
Okay.
So it's going to have a huge hop character, a lot of freaking hops. because it's going to be hazy, there are going to be proteins that actually make for a really good head, as we'll talk soon.
Oh, hops, yeah, head protein.
Bitterness and head are directly correlated, but the milkshake part of it is going to be the addition of lactose, which adds
neat. Oh, I've had one of lactose before. It was a porter, an IPA with lactose. Interesting.
Yeah, so it gives a creamier mouthfeel. Tiki, specifically. I'm getting a lot of pineapple. Yeah, oh, my gosh, that. On that nose. So pineapple, I think... Coconut or
it's like
mango.
You're smelling pineapple juice.
It really smells
like
the beach.
Seriously, it looks like, yeah, it's so tropical.
So I have no idea what,
you
like.
Did you smell that, Ben? Did you get any?
Yeah, what? Yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, here, he needs some too.
Oh, yeah, do you have a glass? Here.
Yes.
Straight me. God, it's so good. Let me enjoy it vicariously through you too. Oh, here.
There you go.
Thank you. Yeah, and your little IPA glass with your little hand warmer section at the bottom. Thank you, girl.
So I'm not sure exactly how this brewery got to Texas or why. I've never heard of it before. The reason I picked it up off the shelf is because this beautiful can art. This is a 16-ounce can.
Gorgeous.
It looks like an impressionist painting of some sort with really bright colors.
Abstract. But it's like bright, but it's like matte.
It is too. Matte, too. Yeah. So it's just a really, all of their art is really cool.
Eye-catching. Yeah.
So that's what I brought. And again, yeah, it's going to have a pretty good head just because of the amount of hops in it.
Cool. Well, cheers. That sounds yummy, yummy. Okay, so we'll dig into it first by defining... I'll start with legs.
Yeah, go for it. Oh, yeah, okay. That tastes like pineapple juice.
Okay, so to define legs, the term legs refers to the streaks or the drops of liquid running down the inside of your glass after you take a sip or you swirl the wine in your glass.
Mm-hmm.
You might also hear legs referred to as tears of wine, especially around France.
Why so sad?
I don't know. It's like so extra emo sommelier. There's the tears of your wine in the glass. It's a sign of a good wine instead of hard life. So a lot of people think legs are caused by the sweetness or viscosity of wine, but those people are wrong. Just kidding. Not to be too judgy.
Yeah, but we're just going to put it out there.
Scientifically, not so accurate. While it is true, yes, in super sweet, syrupy wine, like I've mentioned before, that dessert one I made you try, the Detritus.
Yep.
You may be able to tell the wine is thick and sweet just because of the way it swirls and the residue of the pattern left on the, you know, drip in the glass because it's so heavy and syrupy.
Mm-hmm.
It's viscous or has high viscosity. So what that means is when a liquid has viscosity is high, it means the liquid moves kind of slow and it's quite thick and molassesy or like honey.
Yeah, not just wine, right? We were talking about
anything.
Oil earlier.
Oil or even like those old Victorian glass windows like are just slowly, they like bulge at the bottom because mm-hmm. it's just high viscosity just slowly
reshaping.
Yeah. But none of that actually matters because viscosity caused by sugars does not create legs. That is not why you have lots of legs or noticeable legs on the inside of your glass.
So correlation, not causation.
Right. So who cares about that? Forget everything I just told you about that. But alcohol does have more to do with what creates the leggy streaks on the inside of your glass. More specifically, something called the Gibbs-Marangoni effect or Marangoni. Fleo's brother would know how to pronounce it. Is what creates the legs. So the Marangoni or Marangoni effect, very simply put, is the change or the gradient of change in the surface tension of a liquid when the substance transitions between two phases. So from like ice to liquid, or in this case, from liquid to gas.
Mm.
So when you swirl your glass of wine, the air that's incorporated into it starts to evaporate the alcohol in the wine. And as the alcohol evaporates, the surface tension in the wine changes and lots of legs occur on the inside of your
glass. Very cool.
Yeah.
It's like an instant...
Yeah,
like
as it evaporates, it gets like thinner kind of, and it just gets streaky on the inside of your glass.
I'm into it.
So the more alcohol the wine has, the more evaporation, like the more legs is what I gather. This is seriously such a brilliant example of the Marangoni or Marangoni effect that the NASA website even references a swirling glass of wine while it's explaining this test and concept in outer space.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it's like spot on. This is that. So some common misconceptions are that if a wine has lots of legs or defined legs, that it's a great wine.
Oh, I've heard that. Mm-hmm. Like, the better the legs, the better the wine.
Right.
The better
like my
the women.
blah, blah, blah.
I'm wearing fishnets, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, our little lamp on the table here. It's a Christmas story leg lamp. So this is so appropriate. So anyways, common misconception defines great quality, or that it's a pricey wine, or that it tastes good. And I'm here to tell you the honest to God truth that while you can tell a lot about a wine through looking at it, hints about the age or the varietal or grape, one thing you cannot tell by looking at a glass of wine is if it's yummy or not. So,
fair.
Yeah. While it is true, yes, legs of a wine can be an indicator of the amount of alcohol, no one is walking around in the sommelier world successfully interpreting alcohol content in a bottle by swirling a glass and looking at it.
Sure.
Because for starters, alcohol content varies by such a small percentage. To quantify something that minute by eyeballing it with a swirling liquid is like next to impossible.
Yeah, so that's how you can spot an imposter. Is if they look at a glass and they're like,
BSer.
I can tell this is 16% ABV. Just
red
like looking
flag
at
for
it.
BSer, mile away. Run. And the second reason you wouldn't do that is because it's way easier to just read your wine bottle label that tells you the ABV content.
Right.
Like printed on the side of the bottle.
Sent out, tested. Actually, there's also a formula. I'm not sure if commercial breweries have to use the formula or they have to get it tested for ABV. But I just learned a formula where it's like original gravity minus something, something, give you your attenuation rate equals ABV.
Yeah, we'll have the full formula on our website.
Yeah, I'll look more into that. Just in case you want to bust out your calculator while swirling a glass of wine.
Or send us listener mail about it, grapesandgrain@gmail.com.
Yeah, totally.
So in conclusion, while legs are a thing in wine, they really don't mean anything to the overall quality or the drinking experience of the wine.
Totally a buzzword.
Unless you're like looking to get twisty.
Yeah. Totally a buzzword. So, Laura, tell me then, what are some of the leggiest wines?
The wines that clearly, I guess, would have the most legs are wines that are higher in alcohol content. So some examples of wines of that would be Shiraz, Australian Shiraz, 15%, like what I brought today. Let's see if we can see some legs here. Oh, yeah, then I drink a little. Oh,
don't spill it out your glass.
I wonder if it's like, I mean, there's some. You can see the definite line. It's hard. The lighting's so low in here.
I'm going to trust you.
Yeah.
It's also kind of a little wine glass.
This is not the proper. This is. Here, I even thought this was a traveling wine glass and not so much a tasting or swirling wine glass. Like you want the big bulb for the space and the aeration and stuff. This is an itty bitty.
Oh, I can see him now. Shine the light. Don't swirl it anymore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
So once you give it a minute, the legs really start to drip.
You see all these vertical drips coming down.
And because they're really slow, that probably means that they are more high in alcohol.
Well, yeah.
Or does pace matter?
I don't know. That's
what you would have to compare. It was...
Yeah, I don't know. I think the higher the alcohol, I would assume the quicker it goes. But like, I really... And the more sugar, the slower. But I don't quote me on that because that's where it starts to get a little hazy for me. And then, like we discussed, dessert wines, sherries, tawnies, ports, Madeira, and all of that. So what about beer? Does beer have legs or is that something solely wine related?
Yeah, fun fact, beer does have legs.
antioxidants, who knew?
I know.
Oh, and thank God we're doing this podcast, otherwise we never would have known.
Just learned these things the other day. So beer does have legs. I've never seen anybody swirling their beer to like see the legs.
Okay,
you mostly swirl to get the aromatics instead. But legs carry the same connotations. Like apparently, a beer with good legs is supposed to be a quality beer. But I just don't buy that really. So, but to understand lacing, though, you must first.
Sounds
which
so
could,
cool to me. So intriguing.
Yeah. So sexy.
Yeah. I love lace things. I love handmade laces.
Yeah. So, but to understand that, you first need to understand beer foam, which is what causes
foam
lacing.
Foam party.
And beer foam is all about the body.
Okay.
It's all about the body of a beer. So, beer foam is also known as head, and it's made.
Sorry. I can't stop giggling. It pulls very dope.
We are school children.
If you could ASMR the section, that would be great.
Beer foam, also known as head.
Can't.
It's made possible because of the bubbles in the beer and also certain proteins derived from the malt.
Oh, I wondered if it was a protein thing, actually. I was actually quite curious if it would make sense because, like, in bread... When you're kneading it to make more gluten, so it, like, keeps more of the structure, you know?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so these specific proteins, actually, what they're doing is they actually hate water.
Oh, I know the word for that. It's, like, hydrophobic.
Yes, something like that. Yeah. Hydrophobicity.
Scary. They're phobic of water.
Yeah, phobic of hydro things. Yeah. So they actually, instead of, like, melding with the water molecules. They cling to the side of the glass. They cling together, and they cling to the CO2 bubbles, and then the bubbles form what's a solid called a colloid.
Okay.
And they rise, rise together.
Colloid. Did you nail that? I think you nailed it.
Nailed it. I stumbled, but I nailed it.
Stumbled into that nail.
So this colloid, once they band together, they rise to the top of the beer and they create this nice foam on top. It's actually kind of a solidifying process similar to Jell-O, except much less intense. So it doesn't stick all the way together.
That's fascinating.
Right?
So odd.
And then one other element that affects head is the hops. So they also help because bittering agents, the isoalpha acids, which we've mentioned before, those help stabilize the foam and make it like stick and cling to the glass. And
okay.
They promote head retention too. So like,
wow. Okay. I poured this IPAs beer. Hoppier beers have a little more lacing or whatever.
Yeah. I poured this beer several minutes ago and I've drunk from it and there's still a good half an inch. I would call that like almost an inch of foam like around the rim on the top of the beer. And foam is awesome for two reasons.
Okay.
So first it affects...
Lay it on me.
Yeah. First, head is good for two reasons.
Yeah.
Lay it on me.
Yeah, only two.
First, it affects the texture of the beer. So it gives you like this tingling effervescence on your tongue, like a cool minty toothpaste sensation.
Okay. I like
Have
minty
you ever
toothpaste.
Had head on your tongue.
I love minty toothpaste. It's great. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Reason number two that head is awesome. It also affects the aroma and therefore the flavor of a beer because it surfaces these odor compounds to the top of your glass. And as you drink it, you're getting the orthonasal and retronasal experiences.
So
of
it
those
like
bubbles.
Carries all these little like pockets of aroma to the top of your glass and like bursts them in your face as you like drink it.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I'm into it. That's very clever of beer. So so clarify for me. I'm a little confused. Are foam and lace the same thing then? I was under the impression the terms are kind of interchangeable.
Right. Okay. So lacing, the technical term is actually called cling.
Okay.
And it's the byproduct of foam.
Okay.
So they're not the same thing, but one causes the other.
Mm.
And the amount of cling or lacing can signify several different things about a beer.
Okay.
First, the bitterness.
Oh, okay.
Like we've talked about, more hops equals more head retention.
Yes. You can see from across the room if you'll enjoy that beer or not.
Totally. It also signifies the cleanliness of the glassware that you're being served the beer in. So
wait, the cleaner it is, the more lacing?
Correct.
Oh, good. Okay.
So because things like detergent and dirt and lipstick, they cut right through that shit.
Ew. Okay. So good to know. If you know you're having an IPA and it should be that and it's not in your glass.
Yeah. You might want to check what it's being served in, the quality of the bar. Maybe next time get a bottled beer.
Well, maybe either check your expectation and your standards and have a good time at your dive bar or.
Yeah, true.
Go somewhere else if you have higher
this
standards.
This is all just about awareness. We talked about like the glassware thing comes down to the ultimate enjoyment of the beer. Like,
right.
Remember Elbow Room. God bless Elbow Room. But like, I spent too many dollars on draft beers there that would just come and there would be no foam. It would be this dark beer, syrupy. The lines weren't clean. And it was like, okay, now I know when I go to Elbow
Dirty
Room,
lines are the worst.
I get a bottled or canned beer because like I just don't want to drink that.
There's a few kiosks in the AAC stadium and stuff like that too. Like every once in a while you're like, bagoo, that's...
Yeah.
That's the bad.
Totally.
You're going to have a bad time at that line.
Yeah. Well, and then like legs, beer lacing can also signify ABV.
Oh.
So lower ABV, but in the opposite way. So it's typically a lower.
Did I get it twisted or is it actually the opposite way?
It is the opposite way.
Okay.
So a beer that has a lower ABV, it typically has a better head because the ethanol in a foam is the ethanol in a beer, the more ethanol, it deters foam.
Oh.
So ethanol is like, pew, 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 foam, go away.
Yeah, that makes
sense. So the lower ABV, the better foam.
Yes, because it's like, again, the surface tension gets like more evaporating. So like the bubbles can't like keep their shape if they're like evaporating away with a higher alcohol content. So that makes sense.
Totally.
Okay.
And then
I'm into it. I'm caught up.
One more thing that can affect your beer foam, like especially if you're like pouring beers at home, you should pour your beer into your glass from about 4 inches above the glass so that it gets a good amount of oxygen up in the mint to promote sort of that carbon dioxide fervor.
Yeah. Fervor. That's a great word. Okay, so what kind of beers then have good cling, or what kind of beers give good head?
IPAs, definitely.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we decided IPAs for sure.
And perhaps especially hazy IPAs like the one I'm drinking now because of all of the extra proteins that are not filtered out.
Uh-huh.
Right? So the beer is made, and especially also beers made with adjuncts.
Oh, so, which is like a texture thing we discussed.
Correct.
Yes, okay.
And so wheat, oats, and rye are actually known as head grains.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then also Belgian beers, too, have a lot of lacing attached to them.
Okay. Interesting. Any now, specific reason why with Belgian beers? Just because they're made with all the other adjuncts and things? Or
I'm not sure. It might be a lot of their beers are unfiltered also.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
remaining extra proteins because they're hazier. Not like hazy IPAs.
Cloudy. But cloudy. Like, banana clouds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, each lace, depending on a myriad of things, is going to have its own individual pattern. And I'm sort of unclear on what dictates the color of a beer's foam and lacing. I think it might be like insight into some of the malts used, but I couldn't find clarity on that anywhere.
Well,
but like,
send us listener mail if you know.
Definitely. When you're evaluating a beer for BJCP and judging, you're definitely supposed to note not only the color of the beer, but the color of the head
right.
as well.
So. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll have to figure out what that means.
Size matters, boys.
During this break. I'm just kidding. Thank you so much for sticking with us. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, we hope you're enjoying the episode, but while we have your attention, we wanted to take a quick second to tell you about one of our favorite podcasts.
We've been binge listening to We Like Drinking, and we're super excited to share the show with you guys. This award-winning podcast is about beer and wine.
Love.
It's educational.
Yas.
And these guys are so funny, like literally laugh out loud funny.
Jeff and John at We Like Drinking cover all sorts of topics from the craft beer and wine industries, but they also have a lot of industry guests on, which is pretty cool. Sam Slaughter, a popular booze reporter, was just on there.
Madeline Puckett from Wine Folly, one of my personal favorites, and Elizabeth Snyder, too, from Wine for Normal People, which was actually the very first podcast I started listening to.
And big news, your girls are going to be featured on an upcoming episode of We Like Drinking. So if you haven't already, go subscribe. You're going to love it.
Cheers, y'all.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. We love making this show, and we hope you enjoy listening to it, too.
That's right, and we want to give a huge shout out to our very first Patreon donor, Jeremy.
Whoop whoop! Jeremy was so kind to pledge at the happy hour date level, which means he gets a shout out on air, as well as an invitation to our postseason happy hour.
If you want a shout out on air, you can pledge as a drinking buddy, and to be invited to our end of season happy hour, donate at the happy hour date level. And to really knock our socks off, our top tier is Pick Your Poison, where donors can pick a topic for an upcoming episode.
Go to patreon.com/grapesandgrain to pledge your monthly contribution today.
Cheers, y'all.
Hey, baby. Welcome back to this episode of Legs and Lace on Grapes and Grain Podcast.
You know, we forgot to mention, funny story, Legs and Lace is actually one of the working titles for our podcast.
Oh, yeah. We wanted to call our podcast Legs and Lace, but we were kind of afraid of the audience that might attract.
Yeah, maybe would not attract the same exact audience we were looking for within the beer and wine community.
So those are like our alter ego superhero beer and wine.
Yeah, like crime fighting duo. Crime fighting duo.
Split and Spliffy.
Yeah, Split and Swifty.
We have a lot of dynamic duo names.
We do.
We really do.
It's so exciting. So, and Must and Wort was another one. So I'm really glad we've gotten to use quite a few of those this season. Okay, so now, we're going to marry the concepts of legs and lace together and pull out
the beer boot. Oh, my God. Okay, so the German beer boot. This is an iconic drinking vessel. You've likely seen it in the movie Beer Fest. I actually own one thanks to my sister. Shout out, Nicole. She bought me one for Christmas a couple of years ago.
Oh, my God.
This is
so
the very first time we've ever used it because Laura and I were sitting around trying to figure out how we were going to end this podcast.
Yeah, how do we wrap this up? Yeah, this legs and lace. I was like, God, if only we had Das Boot.
And I was like, shut the front door. I have one.
I have Das Boot.
It's where legs meet lace. And if you guys could see what we just put in this beer.
We will. Go to the website and look at the blog post for this. We have some great pictures.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about the history of the German beer boot.
Because please, I would love to appreciate it. As we appreciate it.
glassware is definitely like a part of the beer drinking experience.
It really is.
But this thing is such a novelty. Let's see. And there are actually many theories about it, how it came to be. So one story, for example, credits the Prussian army with inventing this.
And just a quick history lesson. Prussia was a state within Russia from about the 1500s till mid-1900s.
Yeah.
Until it was conglomerated into Germany.
Totally.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm actually kicking myself with a beer boot because I have family in Germany in a town called Karlsruhe, which is about 3 hours west of Munich.
Wow.
Sort of like southwest near the French border. And I've met them and I've visited them and I've been meaning to go back and visit them. But if I had thought far enough ahead of time, I should have just reached out to them and be like, what do you guys know about the German beer boot? Does anybody even actually use those things outside of October?
Oh, okay.
So,
well,
more to come on that.
Yeah. Well, let's go visit him in person and do some interviews.
Most of.
Yeah.
So, but what I could find on the internet, which I guess is the next best thing.
Next best thing to family.
I did find
family
a source
lore
that rightly pointed out that Das Boot means the boat in German.
Okay.
So not even boot. And it credits English hunting clubs and horse riding clubs with popularizing drinking out of boots, but not glass boots, just regular boots, regular old boots.
Ew. Okay.
Yeah. So that doesn't explain the boat part, though. So I'm not sure, like, what their point in bringing that up was.
Yeah. It's like maybe one of those, like, things where as it was, like, anglicized, they were like, yeah, that sounds the same. They're like, that means boat. That doesn't make sense. And they were like, yeah, who cares? Drink.
False cognate. Yeah.
Yeah. What is it? Homophony or something? I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
Back to Prussia, though. Apparently, one of the the generals in the Prussian army told his troop he would drink beer from his boot if they won the battle. So, obviously, had a
show it on the leave it on the field, and I'll drink out of my sweaty, gross boot.
Yeah. So he was,
I guess they were like, "Well, we really hate this fucker. Let's make him drink out of his boot."
So they did end up winning.
Oh,
according to this legend, they won. But instead of this general drinking out of his boot, he had a custom glass boot.
That is so bougie.
To drink out of.
What did they say? I bet they would have booed him off the stage. Like, boo!
They would have booed him off the stage.
Throwing boots up there.
Okay, there's another legend, though, that I want to tell you guys about. And it says that the German soldiers during World War I would pass around a leather boot full of beer because they were short on glasses.
Okay, like a leather boot or like a leather, like, pouch to drink out of?
No, boot.
Like, boot? Okay.
Boot.
All right.
Getting that butyric acid all up in
like,
that shit.
Okay, but, like, my question is, though, you have wine in a vessel to put it within the boot and a smaller vessel with a chin to transport it from the barrel to the boot. Why the boot? Like, drink it out of the cup that you're using. I don't know.
Look, I'm not going to go back and tell them what they can and cannot do, but...
They're like, fuck it, we're going to die tomorrow. I've always wanted to drink out of a shoe.
Maybe. It seems that they were looking for good luck because according to what I read,
I love it. It
says that they would actually flick the boot before and after drinking for it for good luck.
No, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Like when you slap the bag?
Is slapping the bag for good luck?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Do you know why anyone slaps the bag before you chug Franzia out of a nozzle that some, like, bro is holding?
I don't.
Some sorority sisters, like, waving above your head? No. But you do. You slap the bag. I think
that's
it's for
so
good
funny.
Fortune and good luck.
This is like
a little flicky poo.
This is the beer version of flicking the boot.
Yeah, flick the boot.
So there are also some sources that say there may have been some ritual hazing involved with this. You know, like they'd get like the...
Tales on
the
time.
Yeah, the fucking new pledge class to drink out of someone's boot. But again, most of this is legend and it's not from a... Like, I don't know if this is a reliable source. I got these legends and... wonderful stories from a site called beerfestboots.com, which specializes in novelty drinking vessels.
Well,
so
they definitely want to sell themselves some beer boots,
right?
But also, I'm
legit.
Sure it's seated or rooted within some
I'm gonna just
cultural...
Put, that was my source, and I want to believe it. So we're going to put that out there. So
go to the site, make your own decision.
Yeah. Most of the boots are 1 liter or 34 ounces, but this one I have right here, ladies and gentlemen, this is a 44-ounce beauty.
Oh, perfect. Three-person boot.
Yeah.
Perfect. Fish boot.
Yeah. So again, I don't know if they actually use boots in Germany. I've only had a liter beer mug, of which many I actually now have in my house because I did actually visit Munich, not during Oktoberfest, but I went to the Hofbräuhaus, which is iconic over there.
Yeah.
Got to see my family, which was super fun.
Cool.
But I do know that in the 1990s, Paulaner, which is like the most iconic German brewery, they actually created a new style of beer coined the Fest beer to serve at Oktoberfest. And it literally, in the description of this, the BJCP description of this style, the founder of Polliner or someone from Polliner said, we created it to be, quote, more poundable.
Wow.
So okay. It wouldn't surprise me.
I have something funny to add to that anecdotally that we didn't plan because I didn't read your part of the notes. But when I was in New Zealand, I went to Waiheke Island, where I've gotten a lot of this wine that I brought here. But I also took a ferry up to a place called Rangitoto, which is a collapsed caldera or a volcano, which is a hiking place, like a volcano hike. And I met along the way this German boy, this Bavarian boy.
Oh.
And he was young. I mean, he was like 10 years younger than me.
Bavarian BB.
He was like, you know, fresh out of like GED, like high school German version. And he's like, I'm going to go live in New Zealand and like work. So he was telling me on the ferry back that in Bavaria in his lifetime, actually, they had to start making a lower ABV, a lower alcohol content beer for Oktoberfest because all these non-Germans were coming in and getting vacation sloshed. And getting obliterated on liters of beer at the time. So they had to make more
that was probably sessionable what he was
or poundable
about.
Beer.
Poundable. Now, if we can like look at this boot, look at this lacing.
Dang, y'all.
So the lacing, the beer only goes up like
Jeez
three quarters
Louise,
of the way.
I need to take a photo
and the
of
other
this.
Quarter is just like this beautiful web of like bubbles left behind.
Of the boot.
So this is where we poured in some Stone Delicious IPA, which is a gluten reduced IPA. IPA, so
but it's an IPA, which we were talking about earlier, is gonna have.
Yeah, but I guess you guys can guess what's coming next at the end of all of the knowledge. We're gonna chug this boot and celebrate our second season.
Okay, but before we go there, though, I do want to talk about a couple more culturally significant instances of drinking from shoes. Culturally significant.
Do tell.
So
from lace to shoe drinking, this is one hell of an episode.
Classy. So drinking from a shoe also had its moment in America during the flapper era. So sipping champagne from a kicky little flapper's heel was the ultimate embodiment of decadence and excess, and it became trendy and vogue to do so at parties.
Whoa.
I know. So the display allegedly has its origins at the beginning of the 1900s. In Chicago, at a swanky little place called the Everly Club.
Mm-hmm.
This is a place where the elite, the upper echelon, would gather at this brothel and gentlemen's club in Chicago. And they would host large groups of important businessmen. And so at one point, they were hosting a group of men, the entourage of Prince Henry of Prussia.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Prussia. Hey, Prussia. Hello, Prussia, my old friend.
I think we can trace this back to Prussia.
Yeah. So multiple sources can confirm. So as they were there imbibing, enjoying their night, the show was going on, and through the night, a slipper slipped from the foot of a dancer and fell to the floor.
Oh, my God. Cinderella style.
And a hush fell across the room as a soldier of Prince Henry's inner circle picked up the slipper, tilted a bottle of champagne to fill the shoe, and drained the entire heel in one sip, locking eye contact with the dancer the whole time, and threw the shoe down like a football in the end zone. The crowd went wild, and everyone started doing this at parties through the flapper era.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. I imagine it was something like that. I don't know. How else do you, like, remember drinking out of a stripper shoe? You know?
Oh,
this is how you have to hype it up in your own head when you remember that you were so wasted you drank out of a stripper shoe.
I definitely
no
remember,
judgment.
Remember, you weren't there
in
Vegas when I tried on a stripper shoe.
I was in my hotel room sleeping it off. No. You tried them on. That's way better than drinking out
of
them.
They're fucking heels. They're stripper heels. You can't fill those with water liquid.
Can you imagine trying to do that now? They're like, there went that bottle of Dom. All over the floor. What were you thinking, you fool?
Open toe.
That's probably happened.
Okay. So anyways. These Prussians, am I right? So drinking.
But again, to Prussian soldiers.
Prussian soldiers,
right.
Because it was probably a thing. He was like, no, I've drank out of war shoes.
Yeah.
This is going to be a delight.
This is fucking Dom Perignon.
Yeah,
of
this
shoes.
Is going to be real nice. So drinking from a shoe is still a favorite pastime for those fellas down under. Yes, Australians.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Australians love to enjoy something called a shoey from time to time. So a shooey, that is the practice of pouring the contents of an entire can of beer into one's own or a friend's shoe, then chugging it all in one sitting, and it's commonly used to celebrate victories. Australia Formula One racer Daniel Ricciardo, supercars driver David Reynolds, and DJ Dylan Francis have all been seen doing this at the end of an event.
Shoeys.
Dean and Sean Harrington of the Mad Hueys brand, which is like a fishing, surfing, lifestyle, outdoor brand. They're really credited with popularizing the shoey to the masses because it was a very buzzy Instagrammy thing that they were doing.
I mean, it's better than Tide Pods, I guess.
Yeah, hands down, better than Tide Pods.
Still disgusting.
Still,
that's a good way. Actually, there is an off flavor in beer that smells or tastes a lot like and smells like
gym
old
socks.
Shoes.
Yeah.
So
durian.
It's a good way to practice your off flavor tasting.
Right. And to touch that back to America, in 2017, the shoey caught a lot of attention because unsuspecting Americans were watching a Clippers game when a Clippers fan performed the act on live television during the game, dumping his extremely expensive stadium pint into his shoe before aggressively sloshing the contents of the shoe all over his face as he tried to chug it. And it was quite the spectacle. It blew up the internet, and it finds its roots back to the shoey.
Oh, my God. Was he Australian?
No one can confirm or deny that, but that's why most people assume he did it.
That's hilarious. It's like a self-Gatorade.
Yeah. Oh, man. It was just like, you should Google it. It's all Googled over his face.
Oh my God.
Anyways, that's all I've got about drinking out of shoes.
Well, let's drink out of this glass shoe.
Let's drink out of a shoe.
I'm really glad it's not my shoe or your shoe
or anybody's
shoe.
It's a very clean glass vessel.
Shoe. Yes. Yeah. And since it's gluten-free beer, Laura, why don't you get us started?
Okay, well, I get started and sip a third of this beer.
I'm going to run through the credits.
Will you please run through some thank yous to the people we love and trust so much for our season two?
Absolutely.
Tear in my eye, tears of the wine.
Season two, we did it, you guys. Thank you so much for following us on this wonderful booze-soaked journey. Cannot do it without you. Please send us reader feedback at grapesandgrain@gmail.com. Visit our social media sites. We also have a Patreon if you would like to donate and help us support, help our total wine tab.
Laura's really chugging it.
Yeah, okay. Well,
she's
doing
one
more big sip, and then I'll pass it on to you.
Perfect.
The torch.
That gives me one more moment to give a huge shout-out to Jack and Dorothy's studio.
The hair bubble in the tub.
That's amazing.
Turn. Okay, keep going.
Shout out to Jack and Dorothy's studio.
Yay.
Thank you so much for hosting us. We couldn't do it without you,
so
Ben.
So much fun having you here.
And if any of you are looking to start your own podcast or have any audio needs, highly recommend the studio, East Dallas, representing.
Yeah, and his lovely wife even made us pigs in a blanket this morning.
We showed up at like 9:45 to start recording and drinking gin and tonics.
I was saying, I think the last two Saturdays we were so buzzed, she was like, why don't you guys start off with some pigs in a blanket?
Why don't you have a snack?
Yeah, why don't you guys have a nice base and a good day?
Okay, so should I do this or should I?
Toes up. Toes to nose. Okay, so while you do that, again, big thanks to Jack and Dorothy. And I do want to say that I have been drinking a lot of Australian wines this season. I did live in Australia the last 6 to 7 months, and I am going back, like, big news, after season two, post-season two, and 1 week from now, glug, glug, bubble, bubble.
Woo, Australia!
Yes! I am going back to Australia to live there for another about 6 months, and as soon as I get back, I am actually going to do something really great, which I'll chronicle for the podcast. Das Boot.
I'm sorry. I just the boot spilled all over me.
It aggressively sloshed on your face.
When we say we appreciate you coming on this journey, thank you.
This Clippers guy was probably just trying to recreate the boot experience. So anyways, yes, I will be going back to work the 2019 vintage in Australia, which I'm super, super excited about. I'll be going to the Barossa Valley, where I'll be staying and working vintage with three different wineries. With Small Fry Winery, here you go, Ben. Small Fry Winery in Barossa Valley, which is a certified organic and biodynamic winery. And then I'll be traveling to Rusden Winery, which is a traditional hand-processed, hand-picked wood... winery, and then with Soul Growers as well, which is a group of corporate men who left the corporate world.
You're
to
doing
start.
All three?
I'm going all three. So actually my internship credit that I need for the associates I'm getting in viticulture and enology at TV Munson's Grayson College it requires me to have a 24-hour internship. So I mailed quite a few places and quite a few emailed me back. And I chose these three, and so I'm going to do about 30 hours at each. So
that's
it's
going to
take me about a month. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Which
I'm
is about
so
the
excited.
Length of a vintage tour, usually. So I'm super stoked, and whenever I come back in the summer, we'll be taping our season three. So look out for that soon, and we're super excited. Thanks for joining us through this whole journey so far.
I'll cheers to that with the boot.
Raise a glass to that, bitches. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. If you'd like to be featured on our future listener mail segment, please email any questions, comments, or anecdotes to grapesandgrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain, @gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Grapes and Grain Podcast. Remember, that's grapes, plural, and grain, singular.
Find us online at grapesandgrainpodcast.com to see blog posts that go more in-depth to each episode. You can also download or stream the podcast there.
And of course, find us on Patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you'd like to pledge a monthly contribution. And a huge thank you to Jack and Dorothy Studios for having us in today. We couldn't do it without you, Ben.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast today. Cheers.
Cheers.
What you drinking?